It's a little weird. We're doing probably the biggest album of the year in episode two. Like, maybe we should have teased it more. Maybe we should have built up to it. But I can't control when things dropped. February 1st, 1994, Nirvana were on the cover of Rolling Stone. Evan Dando of the Lemonheads was on the cover of Spin. Yokozuna was WWF champion. The Dallas Cowboys just won the Super Bowl. Again, God, I hated them. Jim Carrey was about to become the biggest movie star on the planet, with Ace Ventura dropping in just a couple days, and a little punk band from the East Bay just dropped their third album. Running up and out and growing bored with my smoke-jack boring room. There are people in your life that will tell you they were Green Day fans before Dookie, that they saw them at Gilman before they were banned, that they had Kerplunk on cassette and 39 Smooth on vinyl, that they liked them before they were sellouts. These people are liars. Unless they grew up in Oakland or Alameda or Berkeley, but that kid you went to high school with, yeah, they're a liar. They discovered Green Day, same as us. Whether it was watching the video for Longview and having this exact reaction, hearing this line for the first time. When masturbation's lost its fun, you're in the or seeing them get in a mud fight with a crowd at Woodstock 94.
Don't say a word. Just be quiet.
If people turn me one in mud hippies, I am not going to become a mud hippie. I don't care what you say. I don't care what you do. I don't want to be a mud hippie like you.
We're seeing them perform at the 1994 VMAs and wondering where that song that they played is when you finally bought the album. Spoilers, you are going to have to wait another year. Or maybe you were just a kid in 1994, but had a friend whose older sister had much better taste in music, and she didn't want her dorky brother and her dorky brother's dorky friends to listen to dorky music, so you got to borrow cassettes. As long as you didn't tell mom, because it had a certain black and white sticker.
Parental advisory. Explicit content.
Is this the part where I do a whole bio for the band? Do you care about a whole bio for the band, or is listening to Billy Joe Armstrong's lyrics enough of a bio? Are listening to his words enough to tell you who they are, where they're from, how they grew up, and all that David Copperfield kind of crap? I guess context matters. We wouldn't be listening to all these songs 30 years later just because they're catchy. Well, catchy probably helps.
Do you have the time to listen to me whine about nothing and everything all at once?
Billy Joe Armstrong and Mike Dirnt became friends when they were 10 years old. 5 years later, they formed a band that wasn't called Green Day. Well, yet, anyway. But Raj quit and Sean got married. They should have known they'd never get far. That reference would have been way better if this all happened in the summer of 89. But that was 1988, when original drummer Raj Punjabi was replaced and bassist Sean Hughes also left. I was going to say forcing Mike Dirnt to switch from guitar to bass, but forcing sounds like it was against his will, and being mean to your second bassist is more of a Metallica story than a Green Day story. But now they're a three-piece. Now it's early 1989, and now they're actually called Green Day. Billy Joe said on VH1's Behind the Music that he considered Green Day to be the worst band name in the world. Their previous band name for the last 2 years? Sweet Children. Why the change? There was another band in the Bay Area named Sweet Baby who'd been around longer, and when Sweet Children were going to drop their debut EP, 1,000 Hours, they didn't want to cause a confusion. Thus, the new name. Do I have to explain it's a weed reference? Like, you probably assumed it was a weed reference, even if you didn't know it was a weed reference.
17 to drug out on good.
In 1990, Green Day released their first full-length album, 39 Smooth, along with a couple more EPs, Slappy and Sweet Children. Yes, they couldn't let that old name die completely. And in 1991, they released their second full-length album, Kerplunk. By this time, they've got a new drummer. No, this won't become a Spinal Tap or Pearl Jam-like parade of drummers. This one would stick. John Cliffmire replaced original drummer Raj Punjabi, but John decided to go to college in 1990. Billy Joe Armstrong and Mike Dirnt continued with a band, originally had the drummer and lead vocalist of another local band, The Lookouts, filling in while John was away at school. But that temporary drummer became more permanent because that fill-in was Trey Cool. And as I double-check my notes, and he's still in the band.
Let's do the bridge we torched 2,000 times before.
Is this where we talk about Green Day selling out? Do you believe Green Day sold out? Do you think there's anything wrong with selling out? Are you a young person that accidentally got this far into listening to this episode and thinks I'm talking about selling out concert venues? I'm not sure that this is even a thing anymore, or at least not a thing that's looked down upon, but it sure as hell was in the 90s. Selling out meant compromising your integrity, your principles, your authenticity to make money or gain power or both. And not just in the punk rock community or the indie rock community. It happened in pro wrestling, when especially in ECW, when wrestlers signed contracts to bigger companies like the WWF or WCW.
You sold out! You sold out! You sold out! You sold out!
The movie Reality Bites, also conveniently from 1994, is a great example of this. Have you seen it? Of course you've seen it. Have you seen it since you've turned 35? It's a different movie. Watching it as a youth versus an old. And 35 isn't old, but it's old enough that, yeah, capitalism is bad, especially late-stage capitalism that we're currently in, and compromising your integrity and your principles and your authenticity for money or power or both is bad. If you think Green Day did that, then fine. They sold out. But is making a living from your art without compromising your integrity and principles and authenticity, is that bad? Just because you signed with a major label, and sure, we love to romanticize staying with an independent label, being free from that corporate structure and making it without making some rich dude in a suit become even richer. But there's also kind of like some physics involved, right? Dookie sold over 20 million copies worldwide. An independent label like Lookout Records that Green Day was signed to wasn't going to be pressing 20 million CDs or cassettes. They probably didn't have the capacity to distribute records that far out of California, and Green Day wouldn't have all the international super hits that they have today. Whether they're true punk or not is another argument that's been happening for 30 years. I was not in the East Bay in the early 90s. I was not at shows at Gilman watching bands like Operation Ivy and later Rancid and The Offspring before they got radio play. I was discovering these bands, same as you, I'm sure, through the radio, through skate videos, through magazines. Hey, remember magazines? I'm not here to gatekeep what is punk or pop punk or a poser. I guess that's for you to decide when you're listening to Dookie alone, all by yourself. When no one is looking. All right, so I thought for one of my favorite albums ever, I was going to invite one of my favorite people ever to talk about this album.
Oh, come on.
We got Casey Jo Loes from The Edge in Toronto. How long ago was it? I think it was like just before Christmas when I texted you and I was like, hey, what's your favorite album from 1994?
I got to tell you, Ed, that was one of my favorite moments of the entire year. And this is not hyperbole. I'm not kidding. You're just like, you asked me top three albums of 1994. And I was like, ooh, this is the hardest question ever. And I love you for this. So, yeah, it was a highlight. It was out of nowhere.
It's a weird question, but it's like there's so many great albums from 1994.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's too many. I had a hard time, but the first one that came to mind was Green Day Dookie. That was one of the first ones because it was just, I don't know, it just was like almost something that formulated who I am in a certain way. And I guess that maybe says a lot considering the album is about like masturbation and stuff. Like, well, don't take it to heart in that way. I didn't know what they were talking about for most of the time. I was only 10 years old.
Yeah, it's wild to think about it now. Like, I think for me, I think it was the first album that I bought used. I bought a used cassette from a used store that was in my neighborhood, and I can't remember what it's called right now. But, like, at the time, like, you know, like, my parents would bet me cassettes because I was, like, 10, 11 years old. Who else is buying you cassettes? But this had, like, you know, the parental warning sticker. And there's no way my parents were going to let me buy that. They were already kind of like weird about, oh, yeah, here's an album with a naked baby on it. let's not cross the line here more for a 10-year-old. But like, I don't know, it meant a lot. And it was just like a coming of age album that I probably didn't really understand as much until maybe I was like 14, 15, 16 years old.
Oh, wow. You were even more understanding later on than I was. I was one of those late bloomers. I may be still learning to bloom. I don't know. But I know what you mean about the album you're not supposed to listen to. I was definitely not supposed to be listening to this. And I think what really stands up for me is when I did first play it, is that for the first time, I think I felt like I could be someone or something other than the circumstances I was born into. Billy Joe and Mike Dirnt and Trey Cool, they were different, you know, and they showed me and really, I think, allowed me to embrace differences within myself, that it was okay to be kind of like a weirdo of sorts.
Do you remember the first time you listened to this album, and do you remember the last time you listened to this album, besides from like when I was like, hey, can we talk about Dookie?
I think the first time that I remember listening to this album is I think I got the cassette. I don't know what I had really heard. I think maybe I probably heard some of the songs on the radio, but I don't even really, that's not like a visceral stand-up memory for me. I remember playing it front to back cassette. I remember sitting in my bedroom on the floor. I remember the feeling of the carpet. I remember the smell of like the furnace heating. So that was like kind of the start of it for me. And also this was one of the first kind of songs that I learned to play on the guitar. 1994 was a big year for me, thinking that I was, you know, in the grunge era, learning to strum out a few songs on my guitar. So this was it. And then the last time that I listened to it, really prior to this conversation, was kind of near the end of last year, when I heard that Saviors was coming out and they're going to be playing Dookie front to back. They're playing American Idiot front to back, and they were considering the new record to be like their trifecta. Mm-hmm. So I had a couple of rips through it again while cleaning my apartment.
I can't believe they're not rolling through Winnipeg when they're playing this tour. I might be sleeping on your couch on August the 1st.
Yeah, I think we should go to this together. It would be amazing.
Is this record timeless or of its time?
Well, Ed, I believe all time is happening simultaneously all at once. And also, though, I feel like it's timeless.
Yeah.
I feel like it's timeless because, it was a big deal for them. And something as iconic as this, I don't think goes away. And I also see it like in some of the younger generations that are like, you know, they think Green Day is vintage. Can you can you just sit with that for a second? This is vintage now.
I mean, American Idiot is vintage at this point.
I know. It's really weird.
I agree with you on the timelessness of it, because I can completely see like a 14-year-old kid picking up Dookie and relating to it. Whereas like there's like a lot of other albums like, ooh, I don't know if like, you know, like this would mean the same to a kid who is our age now when it came out.
Yeah, I agree. And also like it's not a big commitment. 38 minutes, 22 seconds. She ain't long, but her impact is deep. And that's what matters, babe.
is this Green Day at their peak?
I don't know about that. So I guess I'm going to respond with another climbing metaphor, that maybe this was Green Day's first really big crux. Mm-hmm. And the crux is like the most challenging part of a climb. And so I imagine releasing something like this 30 years ago, something that's so iconic, that had, you know, the punk, the angst, the fury. I imagine that it can be hard to follow up, but they did, yeah. And they have, and they still do. So I don't really think that it's their peak.
Right. No. Like they have like a weird trajectory, right? Cause this was the third album. The first two albums get like, people will pretend, oh yeah, I was listening to Green Day. Like before. No, they weren't.
No, I'm not pretending.
You're
I didn't.
A liar. All right. Even like, you know, even listening back to Kerplunk, like I'm like, I don't know. Is it really that good? I don't even know.
I know.
But yeah, like the later albums like Warning and everything between kind of like Dookie and American Idiot were really good. But then they hit like this other stride with American Idiot. And it's like, oh, is that Green Day at the top of their game? And
why do we always have to know where the peak is? We might not know. They might not know where it is, right?
I think it's just curiosity for my part, right? Like, is this, you know, there's always like in my head, like, is this the biggest band in the world? If you were going to put a music festival together, Where would you, you know, like, are they at the top? Are they like a mid-card kind of thing? And I feel like at certain points in Green Day's life, if it's, you know, Dookie, maybe like a year after Dookie, maybe like 95, Green Day's kind of near the top of the marquee. American Idiot, they're probably like 2004. They're like up there with like U2 as like, you're a headliner right
now. I had a conversation the other day with my co-host, Coulter. We were just like, who's bigger, Blink-182 or Green Day? So, Ed, you know, I'm going to put you on the spot here. It's a hard one.
I mean,
and it, you know.
I know who I prefer more. I prefer Green Day way more. I don't know.
Well,
I think
you have
really
to say
depends.
That on this episode. If you didn't say that, you'd have to say that.
I think it really depends on your generation. I feel like my co-host, Nicole, would probably say Blink-182 is bigger than
right.
Green Day. Are you nodding at
yeah.
me? Green Day bigger or Blink-182 bigger?
It's a hard question.
Yeah, she's got this frowny face like, don't make me answer this question.
Yeah,
I'm not
how
even
I feel
on this
too.
Episode.
You can cut this out.
What is your favorite song on this album?
Ooh, I, you know me, brevity's not my strong suit. I guess I'd have to narrow it down to Longview.
Okay.
It's very classic, but I also have to say Basket Case is up there. That still stands up for me. And then When I Come Around, I mean, it's really hard. Oh, and also the hidden track at the end, FOD, All By Myself. That one, again, I had no idea what they're talking about. No clue, but just the fact that there was a hidden song and it sounded mischievous and maybe I, you know, subliminally had an idea of what he was singing about. But yeah, what's my favorite song? I just picked five.
Yeah, I think for me, it really depends on when you asked me, right? Because if you asked me, like when I first got Dookie, I think I probably would have said When I Come Around. That was like, that was my favorite song off this album. I'd always like, you know, skip songs to get to that song. Even though like this is an album I love to listen to back to front and try not to skip anything. Then you asked me like, I don't know, 10 years ago, I don't know, maybe it's Having a Blast. Maybe it's like something that we don't play on the radio too much, that it's like,
yes.
Oh, here's like a
yeah,
spicy
a
little gem.
Yeah. I also want to say that the album art, just really quickly, the album art is like so cool, and that was really iconic for me. You know, that monkey holding the turd in its hand and it's got the thought bubbles of like throw. Like there's just a lot going on there. I really enjoy that.
Casey Jo Loes from The Edge in Toronto. Thank you for sharing Dookie with me.
Thank you so much, Ed. I appreciate you. This is so fun. I can't wait to hear the rest of these episodes.
Dope. That was great.
You're the best.